We have booked a guest who really exemplifies what this show is all about. We always say that this is the show where nothing is off topic, and you got to love a guy who can talk as many different things as he can. He is a Scripps Howard pro wrestling columnist, FoxSports.com MMA columnist, and longtime president of the Pro Football Writers of America. I could only be speaking of Alex Marvez. It's a pleasure to welcome you to the show tonight, Alex. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to have you in the FDH Lounge. It's a tremendous pleasure. I'd like to start by asking you here about the NFL, which you've obviously been covering for quite a while now. In this moment that we're in with the league, it seems as though they can just withstand a lot of stuff. They've had some off the field controversy the last couple of years. They've got what looks to be a rather unexciting draft class coming in here. There are different angles about that, but boy, the one thing you would think that they could not withstand would be the loss of the labor piece that they've had for about the last two decades or so here, and yet it's looking like in the next year or so we might be moving towards the precipice, does it not?
Yeah, it sure does, but you know what? I think there are some NFL owners that don't mind that at all, to be honest with you. I think they're going ahead and looking forward to 2010 and not having a salary cap. I just get that feeling that there is not going to be a labor agreement reached by then, and once there is no salary cap, all bets are off as to what direction the league goes. I think there are going to be a lot of owners, and you know, without a cap, people are going to think, oh, well, this will allow, you know, the Daniel Snyders of the world to spend freely. Well, I think there's a real limit, you know, basically because of the rules of the CBA, there's going to be a real limited number of free agent players available to sign, because the number of years it takes to become an unrestricted free agent is going to jump from 4 years to 6 years. It's going to take a lot of players off the market. You also are going to have safeguards put in that are going to prevent the top eight playoff teams from going ahead and signing any players before they lose players. These are mechanisms that have been put in to prevent, if a Daniel Snyder is wildly successful in 2009, it's going to go ahead and handcuff him from going out and spending like crazy on the market. And I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of owners are looking forward to it, to go ahead and not have to spend to a minimum amount like they have under the rules of the salary cap right now. I think a lot of teams are going to be pocketing $40, $50 million in profits in these tough economic times and are going to force the players to come back to a labor deal that is a lot friendlier, a lot better on their terms. Now, when is that going to happen? You know, we are guaranteed football through 2010, but in 2011, all bets are off. And this could get ugly. You could have the players go into Congress under their new labor chief, Demaurice Smith. They could be petitioning to go ahead and get the NFL's antitrust exemption taken away from them, which would open up the floodgates on a lot of other issues that are going on. But you're right. That is one of the few things I think that could really sink the NFL, because, you know, everything in sports, there is nothing guaranteed. You think back 50 years, baseball was the king of all sports, and really no one knew what to make of the NFL. You had two leagues going on. In fact, you had the upstart AFL and the NFL. Later they merged in 1970, and you've had that tremendous success, and baseball's fallen by the wayside, partially because of a strike. And I'll tell you this, I think if the NFL does go on strike, and if it comes to that, you're going to have a lot of alienated, angry fans that may not come back and may try to find a new sport as their passion.
I think that very well could be the case. I tell you, you know, as far as the players wanting a change, be careful what you wish for. As you pointed out, no salary cap equals no salary floor. The Mike Browns of the world already are looking to pocket everything that they can. Good luck getting the Cincinnati Bengals to spend on anything in a world like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and this is an incredible time for teams to not only make money, but then what I wonder is how many of them actually try to maybe go ahead and sell their team after going ahead and cleaning up after one season. Another thing that I think is going to happen, you're going to see a lot of veteran players flood the markets. You're going to look at these contracts, and teams are going to say, you know what, we can get by with it with a lesser option, or maybe we'll just go ahead with a young player, and it's going to become a clearinghouse for player salaries. I would not be surprised about that at all. And you're right, the Arizona Cardinals, the Cincinnati Bengals, teams that don't have a history of spending a whole heck of a lot, this is something that's absolutely great for them as owners try to recoup some of the losses that they've been suffering in the past couple of years. The NFL's still making money. The owners just aren't making enough of the money that they would like to see, and they want some major changes made to the collective bargaining agreement, and we got to see if the NFLPA comes around to it or decides to play chicken with the league.
Well, as far as that goes, Alex, with the dynamic that's at play here, I'm a little bit fatalistic. I really am going to be interested to see what your take is on this. I look at the fact that, again, sometimes you get frozen into positions, whether it be because of a sense of honor or whatever. I look at baseball, the fact that Bart Giamatti passed away almost immediately after banning Pete Rose, and I think that really complicated the efforts to try to bring Pete Rose back into the game. Nobody wants to look like they're selling out Bart Giamatti and the stand that he took. Gene Upshaw swore up and down if there was ever an uncapped year, the league would the players would never accept going back to a cap. I wonder about honoring the wishes of their late executive director here. That's obviously going to be something that's going to complicate this dynamic.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, that's the whole thing, though. Once players, though, once they start to lose money, and I'll be honest with you, Sports Illustrated had a great story a few months ago about what has happened to some players and their salaries. How many players end up leaving the game with not nearly as much money as you would think, you know, making bad financial decisions. And I think once the paychecks start drying up for some players, there's going to be a lot of unrest. I don't know how tightly these players are going to be able to stick together through a player strike simply because the stakes are so high. You know, that's what I think it comes down to. There's so much pressure on Demoris Smith right now. I mean, look, I think if you're Troy Vincent and Trace Armstrong and David Cornwell, the guys who fell short for that NFLPA executive director's position, you know what, in the long run, it might even be better for you because of the headache that this job entails. I really think it's going to be very hard to come to labor peace with the NFL unless the players are willing to make some major concessions. And they could talk tough now, but once the paychecks stop coming, I just wonder how many of them are going to be prepared for that major loss of income.
That's a very good point, because we've seen a lot of times athletes just don't save a lot. The NHL Players Association essentially was broken in the form that they were at. The same thing could happen. What I find interesting as well, you referenced as far as the NFL's popularity coming from the merger of the NFL and the AFL, as far as that being a factor in that. That was something that was cited as a precedent a little bit over a year ago by Dana White when he was speaking of the Pride UFC merger. Then when UFC acquired the assets of Pride at that point in time, we haven't seen everything with that come to pass as far as all the potential matchups and everything like that. You've still got a Fedor out there, and so some different possibilities that have not yet materialized. But is that one of the factors that's helped them really skyrocket past boxing and past pro wrestling as far as being the king of pay-per-view at this point in time here? Boxing doesn't give you the matchups because of politics. MMA in large part seems to.
Well, I think it's a different fan base. You know, in terms of the boxing is just faded because I really feel like this was a sport that had a large ethnic population supporting it for a time. If you look back, and it was a very polarizing thing, but you had boxers that were political figures, larger than life figures. You had great heavyweights. These are things that aren't there anymore. You know, boxing has just done such a major fade away. And really the big fights now, I mean, when you think about it, largely, you know, Hispanic fighters, very popular still among Mexican fans, Southern California, Texas, places like that. You do great pay-per-view numbers. But, you know, really, when it comes to mainstream fans, and you talk about kids in the 18 to 34 demographic, so many of them are talking about mixed martial arts fighting. You know, it's a type of sport that doesn't require a huge attention span, so to speak. It could just be one and done. You know, one great punch and it's over, one quick submission and it's over. I think, too, that that Dana White deserves a ton of credit for knowing how to market this. What he has been able to do is also capture a large group of pro wrestling fans. I guess the analogy is the pro wrestling fans, when they get older, they graduate to ultimate fighting, so to speak. They go ahead and they're able to go ahead and follow that sport. And you look at the success of the Ultimate Fighter show on Spike TV, fabulous show. You look at the way that the personalities are profiled. It's a taste of pro wrestling, except it's real pro wrestling, if you see what I'm saying, because these fights are for real. And I just think that UFC, you know, they're in a great situation right now. I do think there's still growth ahead. You know, they just have to watch themselves when they're going ahead and navigating this. They have a very small front office. The Fertitta brothers, the group that owns the Zuffa, the parent company of the UFC, are in major financial difficulties. You know, sometimes Dana White can't help but put his foot in his mouth when it comes to speaking to a mainstream audience, recently attacking a female reporter for her comments of a story that she did, when really there was no justification at all in his personal attack of her and some other offhand comments that Dana made that insulted homosexuals, insulted the mentally challenged. Not a good situation there. But I do think UFC is going to continue to grow, and I think major sports leagues should worry about this a little bit, because I do think, especially maybe in the case of football, UFC is not going to be everybody's cup of tea. But, you know, they're trying to keep young fans, and if young fans go ahead and find something else like MMA fighting, I still think there's a lot of growth to the sport.
Oh, I think there certainly is. You're right about that. And it's really interesting, too. I've seen people kind of question from a historical perspective where MMA might be going here. If you go back roughly a century, give or take, you had pro wrestling on the Kearney circuit that at least in some ways was still legitimate before it morphed into what it is today here. As MMA continues to go forward with the glitz, the glamour, trying to market personalities, is there ever any kind of a danger that they're going to fall into, the seductive trap, perhaps at some point in time, of worked outcomes? Because it can't be good for business to sign Crow Cop, have him come over, and have him flop completely. One wonders what lessons they might be drawing.
Well, I think the problem that they made the big mistake with Pride was, you know, they panicked at the time. There was a competitor. Showtime was trying to go ahead and buy Pride. There was concern about the videotape library. And, you know, a UFC facing a competitor, and at the time they were making good money, they decided to go ahead and make that purchase. The thing that they didn't realize, and I think a lot of people at the time didn't realize, were basically how beat up these fighters were that they went ahead and signed. It was very, you know, a lot of these guys had been through a lot tougher battles in Pride because of the time limits. The rules were different. There were things allowed, you know, very vicious striking that was allowed in Pride that isn't allowed stateside. So you had fighters who got older, fighters who couldn't adjust to fighting in a cage, much like Mirko Krokop. I think it was a combination of both, you know, a lot of the fights that he had been in, and also his inexperience in fighting in a cage. And there was a major difference between the Pride rings and the rings in a cage. But I think that if they went to watch fights or people ever were to question the outcomes of these fights, you'll have what happened with Elite XC, a company that went under because of the fact that Seth Petruzzelli, Kimbo Slice fight, Seth Petruzzelli went on the radio afterward and basically said that, you know, essentially they were told me to fight this fight a certain way and to go ahead and keep it standing up and try to win the fight like that. Well, once that legitimacy was questioned, CBS dropped them like a hot potato, and I think that that UFC would run into the same difficulties there. I always think that it'll remain legitimate, and if they want to go ahead and mess with it and try to make it pro wrestling, I think there are major consequences to pay.
Yeah, I think that would be very, very tough for them to do. I don't think the risk would be the reward would be worth the risk. And also, Alex, and this is a perfect segue here, worked outcomes, as we've seen over the last 7 years or so, are no guarantee of good quality entertainment from what we've seen of the decline of the WWE since the last real boom period here. As we had the other night, the reshuffling of the deck here in the form of their annual draft that does sort of set like kind of a rough direction for the next year, I'm curious what are some of the big things you're seeing come out of that. One of the things that just struck me was they're putting all their eggs in the basket on Raw of Randy Orton being the lead heel at a point in time when he's getting face reactions from a lot of people, especially younger males. It's kind of ironic. 5 years ago, they turned him when there was no justification for it. Now they're backed into a corner of not being able to turn him. I just find it very interesting, the moves that were and were not made on Monday night.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's a major problem right now they have with Triple H and you know, Paul Levesque, you know, the son-in-law of Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon's real-life husband. And you know, they thought that by going public with the fact that they had a marriage and trying to draw sympathy for the McMahon family, that would strike a chord with fans. And instead, the McMahons are just not sympathetic figures when it comes to the crowd. And they may draw a crowd pop here and there, but to be honest with you, most people want to see the McMahons as heels. That's what they do well. It's something that comes naturally for them. So, you know, I think that that's one of the things that they underestimated. The reason they're putting so much talent on Raw is that they realize that SmackDown may be in an awful position because of the fate of my network. You know, that is a network right now that originally had some five-year deals on the table with its affiliates. Now they're basically trying to go ahead and renegotiate those five-year deals to make them year-by-year deals, and that's really questioned whether or not my network is going to be able to survive in these tough economic times, be able to generate enough economic revenue to remain solvent as a network. Because if my network goes, then WWE has to go ahead and play SmackDown probably on a lesser network. Might even be on WGN, where they're going to be debuting a new Superstars show soon as well. So I think WWE's facing a tough time. I think that a lot of the characters have just been played over and over so much. I mean, the stuff is repetitive. I'm not a big fan of their product, to be honest with you, and maybe it's generational. You know, the thing that they've done that's so smart is to be able to go ahead and get a kid's audience. And by going ahead and appealing to teenagers and young adults, what they can do then is, you know, when you sell a ticket to a show, you're not just taking a kid, you're also bringing in the parents. You know, when you're going ahead and you're selling merchandise, you're doing all these things that are aimed at kids, like Hannah Montana, Molly Cyrus, or Miley Cyrus type of thing, if you understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So that's what they've really become. It's just the wrestling has changed. You know, for some people, TNA wrestling is their cup of tea. They've switched over to that on Spike. You have a lot older performers, guys that that people grew up watching during wrestling's boom period. They're having a little bit of success there, maybe not so much on pay-per-view, but television ratings. And then you have some fans who really like MMA are watching this Ring of Honor promotion out of Philadelphia. They're watching them on HDNet, Mark Cuban's network, the fledgling network that shows a lot of MMA fighting. So pro wrestling's always going to survive in some form. You know, look, there's a tremendous global audience that WWE hasn't even begun to tap. You're talking China. You're talking even more world touring. They're already making an impact in Mexico. There are plenty of avenues for WWE to make its money, but I just look at this as a basically a federation that is not going to grow much more, simply because I think that some people just don't like the McMahons, and I think some people just don't like the product they're selling.
That's true, and you know, it's always interesting to see, Alex, when it goes beyond, the WWE goes beyond people like you and I who really follow it here, to get a chance to expose itself to the mainstream, as it did last night with this ESPN special. What I found to be very interesting, we talked on our show 2 weeks ago to Jeremy Schapp. One of the things that he got across was he was interested. His theory was that Vince McMahon more or less invented modern sports television as far as the presentation of it, the way that TV presented regular sports in 1985 versus right now. Theory was noticeably absent last night from what we saw. It more or less seemed like a standard type of profile of the WWE. It had some interesting behind the scenes stuff, but I'm just curious what you thought of how the WWE came across to the ESPN audience last night.
Well, I mean, it was basically a powder puff piece, and essentially, you know, a lot of the important issues really weren't tackled in earnest, you know, but that wasn't the intent of the piece. I mean, I don't think Jeremy Schapp went in there trying to go ahead and expose the fact that WWE treats its wrestlers like contracted labor, and just how they don't have benefits, how they don't have pension plans, things like that. Didn't really tackle the Chris Benoit issue, didn't really delve into, you know, the suspect drug testing policy that WWE has that includes Vince McMahon himself not being part of the testing. You know, I mean, and he's pretty jacked up for a 63-year-old, and yet he's not subject to it. It just seems like Jeremy didn't even read the congressional papers that came out from WWE's testimony. You know, Vince McMahon saying that the reason they have offered free rehab to former performers who have run into substance abuse problems is simply because of wanting better publicity. You know, things like that. He didn't tackle these issues. But if you're just a fan, there are some people, quite honestly, that don't want real life to infiltrate their sports. They don't care how the sausage is made. They just want to go ahead and watch a product on television. It's the same. The steroid issue does this all the time. You know, how much has it really affected baseball? Have fans stopped buying tickets because of steroids in any sport? No. You know, I agree that they need to be patrolled, but there's a large portion of the audience that simply doesn't care. They don't want to know what goes on behind the scenes. They just want to come back on a Monday night, relax, open up a beer, sit in front of the TV, watch wrestling, forget about their worries for 2 hours, and then move on. And that's basically how I sort of the piece came across. It was interesting if you're a fan of wanting to see a little bit about how the product is made. But as far as tackling anything heavy, I don't know if that was Jeremy's intent of the piece. I don't know if that was if ESPN had a duty to go ahead and try to present it this way. But the reality is that it didn't come across that way. Hey, I've got to run because I got to go do something on Sirius. But Alex, thanks for having me on tonight. I really had a great time.
Pleasure having you. We'd love to have you back sometime soon. Thank you so much, Alex. Pleasure's ours.
Be good. Take care.
Alex.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Alex Marvez, everybody. It was great pleasure to have him on here tonight. Guy who can talk about, as I said, a lot of stuff.